Good morning, Cedarville. It is great to be here. Thank you, Dr. White, for this opportunity. We are very honored and blessed to be here. Like he said, we are Ken and Tara Winter, and you know, we've lived in Cedarville for almost 13 years, and we've come to hundreds of chapels, and this is the first time we've ever been on this side of it. So it's a little bit exciting and overwhelming at the same time. We are here today because we want to share with you a story.
And because it's Valentine's Day, we're going to share our love story with you.
Before we get to the love story, we want to share with you a little bit of the backstory. We all have a story, right? I grew up in a Christian home. I'm a pastor's kid. And as a pastor's kid, I had a great life. Things were actually really good. My dad is a pastor, been over for 40 years. He's down in Florida. My mom's a nurse, and I'm the oldest of three children. And so I grew up treating my younger siblings as any older brother would. And things were good. And at 5 years old, I asked Jesus to come into my heart, believe that he was the Son of God, and life as I knew it was good.
I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia and had a great growing up. Grew up with Christian parents. I am also the oldest of a younger brother and sister. I come from a long legacy of believers. And so literally from the day I was born, I knew about God. I was taken to church. I grew up in Sunday school and active as part of the local church body, involved in youth group, and things were really good growing up.
Things went bad. My freshman year, after junior high, my two best friends moved away. My youth pastor, who I loved and adored, moved on to a new position, and everything that I kind of knew growing up started to change, and I decided to make some new friends. And the friends that I chose were not necessarily the best. We started to engage in activities that we shouldn't have been engaged in. In fact, growing up in Colorado, I was at the grassroots of some activities. What? I'm not proud, but we lived. We lived for the party, we lived for the weekend. That was my life. And my dad was my coach in baseball growing up, and so we had a really good relationship. But when I started to make bad decisions, things started to go downhill for us. In fact, I entered a season of rebellion. And during this season of rebellion, I did what made me feel good. I did what I wanted to do. And things were spiraling out of control my junior year. Now, the only saving grace in my life, the only thing that was good, was soccer. And in 1995, my soccer team won the state championship. We beat Columbine High School for the championship. It was awesome. It was the highlight of my life. And as good as that was in my life, and as excited as I was to be a part of that team, my personal life, my spiritual life, everything was coming unraveled. It actually got so bad that my dad began to pray about leaving his position in Denver and taking a position in Philadelphia. And so at the end of my junior year, my family decided to move from Colorado to Philly right before my senior year. And I don't know if you've ever transitioned during that time in your life, but it was the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through. In fact, I was angry. I was upset. I had left my team, my friends, and I was in a place of complete and utter brokenness. I didn't know what to do, and I continued to spiral. And my life, I was filling my heart with everything but the faith that I knew as a kid.
I loved high school. High school was great, had great friends. I loved being involved in high school. I loved playing sports in high school. Things were good. My junior year, it was March, and I was out with my friends one night, and I came home by curfew because I was a rule follower, and I walked in to my home, and it was full of people. I walked in and saw my parents' friends. I saw my family members, and right before me came my grandmother, and she took my hand, and she's like, Tara, I need to talk to you. And she pulled me into my bedroom, and she said, there's been an accident tonight. Your mom died and went to heaven in that accident, and your dad's in the hospital in critical care, and we're not exactly sure he's going to survive. Your brother and sister are upstairs sleeping, and we need to wake them up and tell them and get to the hospital. So we did. And we got to the hospital, and The next few months were a blur for me as you're in that recovery and you're just trying to survive. Life was shattered as I knew it. Couldn't make sense of it. Everything that was good, everything that was going just as it was supposed to, was no longer there. I kept grasping for my faith, trying to make it work. Started then into my senior year of high school, and things were unraveling. Home was hard, it was broken. It was nothing like it was without my mom. I was crushed, I was heartbroken. That faith that I grew up knowing since I was a baby wasn't the faith I could grab onto now. It wasn't real, it wasn't comforting. How could a God allow something so awful happen to such a good person? And so I started spiraling. I started making one bad decision after another. And so my senior year, what was supposed to be this really great year, and it was, but it was missing because I just wanted my mom there. One promise that I made to my mom was to go to a Christian college when I went off to college. And so I kept that promise to her, and I chose to go to Gordon College up on the North Shore of Boston. And off I went to my freshman year, excited for a new start, excited to put everything that was wrong and broken and start fresh, start new, maybe start this new faith with God. Got to college and went through, and yes, it was good, it was exciting, but still, I was still so hardened against God. End of my freshman year, I couldn't quite face home. It was still too raw, too hurtful to be there. And so I thought, well, I'll go get the job of my dreams. And I grew up as a Disney kid, so I said, let's go to the most magical place in the world. So I got a job at Walt Disney World for that summer after my freshman year and worked in the college program. And I thought it would be everything I wanted it to be. Except there's this thing about sin is that when you don't deal with it, it tends to just kind of follow you wherever you go. And so at Disney, I continued to just make these bad choices, and I kept spiraling. So when I showed up for my sophomore year at Gordon College, I was more broken than I'd ever been before. It was there one night. We were at a worship service, and it was called Catacombs, where we just really praise and worship the Lord. And for the first time then in 2 years, I felt God. He was there, and he was that comforter that I knew he would be. I just never felt it in my heart. I couldn't feel that healing power that he could give. And it was there that my heart started to soften back towards him. It didn't take away all of that sin. It didn't take away all of that brokenness, but we started healing that faith relationship.
So growing up in Colorado, my parents took us down to Tucson, Arizona a couple times to see spring training. And I walked onto the campus of Arizona State University and I was like, this is where I'm going to school. I'm gonna walk on and play Division I baseball, meet a beautiful girl in Arizona, and then make it to the major leagues and make lots of money. That was my dream. Of course, that was a pipe dream. We moved to Philadelphia my senior year, and everything that I had kind of thought and planned changed. And to be quite frank, I was hoping just to get into college. The only thing that was able to get me in was soccer. I had a couple of opportunities to play at a couple of different schools, and I decided I was going to take a scholarship to a small Christian school in the North Shore called Gordon College. And I was excited to go. I was excited to go and play. I was excited to start new. And I didn't really care that it was a Christian school. My faith was far, far from God at that point. But I was starting new, and I was excited. And I remember just being there and being able to feel like it was a new start. I remember after a couple of weeks, you know, when you get there early as an athlete, you feel like you're an upperclassman as a freshman because all the other freshmen get there about a week and a half later. And so it was like getting started. And all the freshmen were piling into the chapel. You know, I'm walking in thinking like an upperclassman, and I remember stopping in my tracks as I came down the center aisle and I saw her. She was beautiful. She had a big smile, blue eyes, and I remember thinking, and I was a dork. Like, I might have been an athlete, but I had no chance with that girl.
He didn't.
Maybe not at that moment. So we continued. It was my freshman year, and I played soccer. Well, at Gordon, they did this thing called Secret Encouragers. And Secret Encouragers was designed so that girls on the female team would support guys on the male teams. And so the lacrosse team would support the soccer team and the guys. Well, the guys never ended up doing that. It always ended up being the girls. And surprise, surprise. And I started to receive encouragements, Bible verses, cookies, brownies. And the guys would always brag, my Secret Encourager is better than yours. And it was awesome. Well, about halfway through the season, I got an apple pie. And if you know me, you know that the way to my heart is an apple pie. And so I'm eating this thing, and I will never forget, I walked into my dorm room that day, and I didn't care who was in there, I just declared at the top of my lungs, whoever made this apple pie, I'm marrying her. A couple weeks later, they have a big reveal, and all the Secret Encouragers and the players get together, and wouldn't you know it, my Secret Encourager was that beautiful girl, Tara.
So once I was revealed as his Secret Encourager, our dating relationship started to bloom. That's us in college. We'll move on. And we wanted to do this dating thing right. We wanted to make all the right decisions. We wanted to honor God. We wanted to be that Christian dating couple. But we had no idea what we were doing. I don't know if you do, but it was this vague concept for us of how to do a Christian relationship. And so we thought we were making all the right decisions, but yet that sin, that brokenness from our past kept coming up.
Tara was my first real relationship, and so I didn't want to mess that up. And so on a Christian campus, I would ask, you know, what do you do? And they're like, well, you need to be a leader. You know, you need to lead her well. And I was like, well, how do I do that? Well, you got to pray together. And I was like, I can do that. And so we would go to lunch and we'd go to breakfast and I would pray with her. And then I was like, well, what else can we do? Well, I can pray with her at night. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I can give her a hug and pray. Well, then I said, well, why don't we pray together in the dark? So we prayed in the dark. Don't pray in the dark with your girlfriend. Our relationship escalated very quickly after that because I like to hold her hand. And when you're praying in the dark and you think you're being over spiritual, your body starts telling you to do other things. And just to be honest, our relationship became physically intimate very quickly after that. It was exciting, it was thrilling, and it was awful at the same time. Because we knew what we were doing, what was wrong. And as you know, Tara and I are very outgoing people, and our relationship was full of life, and it all of a sudden became very secretive and very isolated. In fact, we didn't even talk about it because I knew if we talked about it, then maybe we would have to stop, and we didn't want to stop, and our friends didn't know, our roommates didn't know, no one knew. And we just continued in this cycle. I stopped reading my Bible. I knew if I opened up my Bible that God would say I would have to stop, I would be convicted, so I closed my Bible. I was in Old Testament. I'd stop going. If the wrath of God was going to meet me anywhere, it was in Old Testament. So I stopped going to class. And what was such a beautiful beginning of a relationship started to become very filled with shame and guilt. And then it happened.
I played lacrosse in college, And it was one of the joys of my life. And I was getting ready for my sophomore year, my season. And we were in the middle of preseason, for you athletes that you know, that's just a really hard time. And we were practicing, we were getting ready for our first opening game. And I had this week of practice. Nothing was going right. Like, my body wasn't working. I couldn't run the way I was supposed to. I couldn't catch. I couldn't throw. Nothing was working. My coach is screaming at me, and I don't know what's going on, and I'm trying my best, but it's not what I was used to doing. My coach pulled me into his office after practice one day, and he's frustrated, and he's like, "Tara, what is going on?" I'm like, "Coach, I don't know. I'm as frustrated as you." And he's like, "Look, you've got to pull it together." I know. I don't know what's happening. So I walked out of that meeting with my coach. And I was frustrated. I was downcast, and I couldn't quite make sense of it all. And my teammate, we were in the dorms, and she's like, "You want to get off campus?" And she's like, "I have to go to Walgreens. You want to come with me?" I said, "Yes, get me off campus. I need to get out of here for a minute." And so we got off campus, and Gordon is similar to Cedarville, as there's not much in the actual town. You have to go to the bigger town. So we went to the bigger town and went to Walgreens, and she's, my friend's out shopping and doing her thing, and I'm still in my head about that conversation with my coach. And I'm walking just aimlessly up and down the aisles of Walgreens, and really just thinking about lacrosse and practice and what the coach said, and suddenly I stop. And I look up, and there in front of me are the pregnancy tests. I hadn't even thought of it. Wasn't even something I could ever imagine. And it was like a light bulb moment. So I took a test, and I paid for it, and I shoved it in the bottom of my bag, and my friend, she did her thing, and we went back to campus, and I went into the bathroom, and secretive, and I'm ripping open the instructions, and, well, you have to take the test first thing in the morning. Well, it was a very long night. So first thing in the morning, I took the test. Clear as positive. I was pregnant. Everything in that moment, obviously, I was overcome. Everything, all that shame, all the expectations that everybody had of us came crashing in. I woke up my roommate and I said, "I've got to tell you something." So she pulled in some other girls that we were close to, and we sat there, and I was overwhelmed and crying and sobbing, and my life is coming to an end is what it felt like. I said, "I need you to go get Ken." Ironically, he was sitting in the front row of his Old Testament class that morning at 8:30, and they walked. It was like just like BTS 104. It's a big class, and they would walk all the way to the front, and they interrupted class and said, "Ken, it's an emergency. You need to come with us right now." So he grabbed Ken, and it's 8:30 in the morning, and they walked him right up into my dorm room. Forget open dorm rules at that point, and we're just... He opens the door, and I'm sitting in the middle of my dorm room floor, and I remember looking at him and just saying, "I'm pregnant." Everything was unraveling.
I was 19. What do you do in a moment like that? I grabbed her hand, took her down to the car, and we drove out to the beach where we had spent many days as a dating couple, just spending time together and talking. And we spent hours that day just crying, scared, confused, no idea what was going to happen next. But I knew I loved her, and I said, "I'm committed to you, and I'm going to be committed to this baby." So, next thing you do in a moment like that when your sin is revealed, obviously there's some time of obviously confession. And so I took her hand again, and we got in the car, and we drove 9 hours to Philadelphia where both of our families lived. I told you how my relationship with my dad was not great. Well, imagine going to your pastor father to reveal your greatest sin. I couldn't get the words out. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. In fact, I had this idea in my mind that the church, that God was going to reject me because I had rejected him so greatly, that my sin was too great. What I'll never forget is that both of our families wrapped their arms around us and said, "We're here for you and we love you." The church that we were attending at that time after school that summer wrapped their arms around us and said that we will walk with you. That was the beginning, at least for me, of a restoration of my heart. And so on June 20th, 1998, we got married. Two babies, 19 and 20. We worked three jobs trying to make ends meet, figuring out what was the next step. We were doing life. On August 16th, I came home from working at a lumberyard and Tara was laying on the couch. It was a hot summer day and she wasn't doing well. And I said, "What's going on?" She's like, "I'm just not feeling well. Something's not right." So we called the doctor and the nurse said, "You know, just take some time, rest. It's probably just some cramping." And so we did, and hours later, she was getting worse, and so I said, "Let's go to the hospital." So we got in the car and drove to the hospital, and we got there, and they did some testing, and Tara was 9 centimeters dilated. Now, 9 centimeters dilated at 40 weeks is great. You're about to have a baby. Tara was 25 weeks. So we were really scared. They brought in doctors and nurses and specialists, and they were doing everything they could to slow down labor. Everything they could to keep it from progressing, but nothing worked. And so they started to tell us that most likely your child is gonna be born today. And if they're born, they have a 10% chance of living. If they do survive, there was just this after this after this, problem after problem after problem. It was overwhelming. Next thing I know, they whisked Tara in the operating room and got me into the scrubs and brought me in, and minutes later, emergency C-section. Our baby was in the world. We didn't hear our child cry. We didn't hear any noises. They took Tara into the recovery room, and about an hour or so later, they brought me into the neonatal intensive care unit. If you've ever been into a neonatal NICU, it's overwhelming. You see these tiny, tiny babies. In the first couple hours of our little girl's life, she had two collapsed lungs, blood transfusions, and she was clinging to life. And so, newly married, 19 years old, father, there I am. I'm looking at my little girl in an incubator, clinging to life, barely visible with all the tubes, and there is nothing that I can do. I wanted to hold her. I wanted to kiss her. I wanted to tell her as her father that everything was going to be all right. And I couldn't do that. I was helpless. And it was in that moment, I will never forget, that everything that I knew in my mind, everything that I knew in my heart, that I'd been taught all of my life, suddenly became real in my heart. I was helpless. And there was nothing that I can do. And I realized that is my life spiritually. I am helpless and hopeless, and I needed Jesus in that moment. And I repented of my sin, and I confessed him as Lord, and I said, "God, I don't know what you want to do with my life, but I give it to you. And if there's any way that you can save my little baby girl, I'd be grateful." God used my daughter and her life to save mine.
This is a picture of our daughter. This was a couple weeks after she was born. She was 1 pound, 9 ounces, and she fit in the palm of your hand. It was a very long 75 days in the hospital, but our baby survived, thrived. We were able to finally hold her after about a month. And as new parents and as this baby was clinging to life, we were just praying over her, growing in our own faith and dependence of the Lord at that moment. Our baby not only survived, she thrived, and she is now a sophomore here at Cedarville University, and we are so proud of Caitlin and the person who she is, that God has such an incredible plan for her life, and we get to be a part of it. God has used her story in profound ways as we have just grown and gotten more and more in our ministry, in our story as we go on. And one of the things that we have been struggling with of it just that crisis pregnancy and how do we minister in that way? I was a 20-year-old college student with a crisis pregnancy. I had three choices, so society says. I could abort, I could choose adoption, or we could try to figure out life and how to make that work together. And abortion was never an option for us. We valued her life. We knew that God had created her. And by being able to see her in the NICU, in the incubator, not that I wish this on anyone, but we were able to see her grow and develop outside of the womb. Psalm 139, you are fearfully and wonderfully made, that literally came to life, and we had front row seats. Society says that it would have been easier to terminate. It would have been convenient, and I could have gotten on with my life and gone back to college and do all the things I wanted to do. God had a bigger plan for her. We did think that possibly our plan was to run and hide and maybe give that baby up for adoption. And so we thought, well, let's escape to California. I don't know why California, it was far away. And let's go to California and I'll have the baby and we'll give it up for adoption and we'll come back to college and pretend nothing ever happened. And then God just really worked on our hearts. And when Ken said, I want to marry you, I want to commit my life to you, I knew that we were going to keep this baby. It was going to be hard. We didn't have any money. We didn't have education. Ken was working 100 jobs, and now we had the sick baby. How were we going to do this? And life was overwhelming, and it was hard. But yet we chose life, and I'm so glad we did.
What Tara didn't tell you is that our story, God has redeemed in unbelievable ways. Never would have guessed that we would be where we are today. To be able to lead a ministry like Sanctify, where she can pour into young girls. She works at the Pregnancy Resource Center, where she deals with crisis pregnancies all the time. God is so good. She said at the beginning that this was our love story, but it's actually not. This is God's love story. That he, while we were yet sinners, sent his son to do for us what we could not do for ourselves, to live the life that I certainly couldn't live, that she couldn't live, and then on a cross at Calvary to take all of our brokenness and our sin and to pay the debt that we could not pay. I can't believe how much he loves me. To be buried in a tomb and then in victory raised from the dead, conquering death and conquering sin. And it is for freedom now that we are set free. And so this opportunity this morning is humbling for sure, but it's also one where we want to challenge you as 19 and 20, 21-year-old college students. You know, as a married couple now for 20 years, that is only by God's grace. I think of Ephesians. I know you guys are going through Ephesians now, 4:32. In our marriage, it says, be kind and tenderhearted to one another, forgiving one another as Christ has forgiven us. Tara and I needed forgiveness in an unbelievable way, but we need that every day. We need his grace and his mercy every day. And it is only by his grace that we can stand here today and declare that truth to you. So here's what I want to say to you this morning, because I wish somebody would have said this to me 20 years ago. If you're struggling right now, if you're in a place of sin or shame or guilt, and you don't know how to get out of it, if you feel trapped, I want you to know first and foremost that you are not too far gone. Your sin is not so great that God has turned his back on you. No, God turned his back on his son on the cross so that he could turn his face to us and call us sons and daughters. That is amazing grace. We sang even that this morning. And so if you're finding yourself in a place of brokenness this morning, I want you to know that you're not alone. Forgiveness is available to you. Would you turn to him? You're on a great campus, a place where there are many people, RDs, RAs, faculty, staff, that would love to talk to you and walk this life with you. Tara and I want to pray with you this morning. We want to pray that God would do a mighty work in your life, ultimately that you would be transformed by the gospel and motivated to live out of that. Would you pray with me this morning? Father God, we are humbled and amazed at your love for us because we run from you. We think we know better, we think we have a better plan, and oftentimes we find ourselves in those places of brokenness and we are drowning. God, we are all sinners. We have all fallen way short of the mark. If there is anybody here in this room today that is finding themselves in that place currently right now, I pray that you would just overwhelm them with your love and your presence. Help them to take a step out of the darkness and into the light. Help them to walk in the newness of life that you have given them through your son, Jesus Christ. And for us then, God, to use our story of grace and your story of victory for the kingdom of God, that people would know you and give you all the praise. In your name I pray. Amen. You are dismissed.